Are you thinking about getting into Dungeons & Dragons? Maybe you're looking to expand your horizons as a DM or a player. If that's the case, then it's time for you to check out the Dungeon Cast, the best D&D podcast out there that helps you passively learn all about the game just by listening. Join co-hosts Will and Brian as they break down the lore of a rich multiverse 50 years in the making in a lighthearted and beginner-friendly way. They cover everything from character creation options to tips for Dungeon Masters. There's something for everyone, no matter how long you've been playing TTRPGs. Find the Dungeon Cast anywhere you get podcasts or on YouTube.
Hello and welcome to the IGN UK podcast. It's not quite podcast 600. This is 599.5, or podcast 600 part 1, as I wanted to call it, because it sounds fancier. Joe, we've made it.
Yeah. Now what?
I don't know. Matt, how are you feeling?
Yeah, exhausted that I had to do probably about a third of the 100 podcasts since 500.
You know, well, when... Yeah. You know when you plan a holiday for ages and it's all you can think about, and then when the holiday finishes, you're like, I don't know what the fuck my life is anymore. That's what I'm going to feel like after podcast 600.
Wow. Well, like we said, this isn't quite podcast 600 because this week today, the episode you're listening to right now, is pretty much a standard episode of podcast. But tomorrow, we've got something special, which I think a few weeks ago I boldly said 60% of people would enjoy.
Yeah, the more I think about it, absolute bollocks. It is so much for us and so little for anyone else.
Okay, is 40% too high?
Yes,
30.
I think 10% is a struggle.
No, I think that's harsh because I think you'll enjoy it if you enjoy us. But tomorrow, if you're listening to this on Friday, that is. So Saturday
the 10th,
we are dropping not only in your audio feeds but on IGN's YouTube channel, which is, when you realize what this is, an absolute disgrace that this is on the main YouTube channel of IGN. We have done a full watch along of the hit film Green Street.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. When you say it out loud.
You think, is this a good use of 2 hours of our time? And I thought, do you know what? I had a lovely time.
It flew by for me, and it was mainly because, and I don't want to spoil anything, Matt fucking hated it.
Yeah, it was eventful. Yeah, we're not gonna spoil either Green Street or our trivia, because, oh God, did we have some trivia.
Oh,
about
so
that
much
film.
Trivia. Big trivs.
Yeah. But yeah, if you're into that, you know, enjoy it. If not, please don't complain, because... Come on, we're trying our best.
Like we've said, we are actually going to do a proper live show when it's not deeply irresponsible to do so. And I know some of you will be like, oh, restrictions are up. I'm in self-isolation now, so that's exactly enough.
And look, there's the Lambda variant now. The Lambda variant. Now, I've played enough Half-Life to know that Lambdas are bad.
Yeah, we've got Lambdas on the loose, and I don't want to give it to any of you by spitting hot fire at a live show.
Exactly.
And indeed, spitting spit, which I will do.
Yeah. Today, obviously, Black Widow comes out. We'll talk about that next week, as well as the Loki finale, because none of us have seen Black Widow yet.
Big
but
Marvel
tomorrow.
Week.
Exactly.
We haven't
Big
had one
Marvel
of those
week.
For so long. It's really exciting. Exactly. I love Big Marvel.
I'm well up for it. And tomorrow is Big Green Street Day. So what we've done is there's a countdown. You can sync it up. It's on Netflix over in the UK. I'm not rest of the world. I'm sorry. I don't know where you can watch it. But it'll be easy to sync up. So if you do want to watch that film with us, it'll be a joy. It'll be a joy, I'm sure. It was fun to do. Maybe it'll be fun to listen to.
It is. I mean, if you're one of those people that listens to watch-along commentaries like Riff Tracks without the film, A, you're bananas, but B, you're going to have a grand old time because we chat over that film way too much because there's loads of us. It was great.
It was good fun. Anyway, let's talk about games and films and stuff because that's what we normally do. So
why break that now?
600 in. Why stop doing that now? Last night, PlayStation had a little state of play. Mainly, a third of it was Deathloop, and the rest was kind of third parties and indies, apart from a little Death Stranding drop, which isn't either of those. They kind of lied. But, you know, it was a mixed bag. I think even though they tried to set everyone's expectations, like, don't expect anything big, people were still like, where was everything? It's like, They told you explicitly.
Yeah, honestly, as soon as they said it was half an hour, you knew what the this deal was, and they told you what the headline game was going to be. Like, I went into this thinking this is exactly what it was going to be, and it was.
Yeah,
and it was fine.
Yeah, and most of those games I was like, nah, not into them. But a couple did stand out. I'm like, do you know what? I'm going to give those a go. But first, why don't we talk about that headline game, which was Deathloop, which I personally didn't feel like I need to see any more of. I'm sold on this game. I feel like I've seen it at about 10 different presentations of this game now, I feel like I've seen. It still looks amazing to me. And I don't know, I didn't learn personally anything new about this game, apart from the fact that Juliana, the character that can be player controlled, is one of the eight you have to hunt down on the island. That's a cool thing that I didn't know. So maybe tactics wise you want to take her out first, get her out of the way.
Well,
I don't know,
you clearly didn't know that because you clearly didn't read my preview from the other month where I explained it, because this presentation saw skimmed it. Unbelievable. So you're supposed to be my friend.
Honestly,
I've got a lot on.
The only thing this presentation did, and I get why there are so many Deathloop presentations, because it is a weird concept and you have to do a lot of explaining. And to be fair, over the course of a lot of those, I've understood this concept much more every time.
Mm-hmm.
To be honest, like you say, I felt like this was one too many. And honestly, I kind of came out of it just going, the gunplay looks a bit worse than I thought it would be. And that was all I really learned from it. And obviously, I haven't had my hands on it, and it might feel amazing, but there was something about looking at it in full action scenes where I'm like, I don't know how much I'm actually super into this or not in terms of the action. I might play like Stealthy Boy.
Very fun. I think, it's hard to know until you've felt the guns, how gunplay is in game. Like, looking at games, you're not really sure. Like, I think I said loads of times in the lead up to Cyberpunk, I didn't think the gunplay looked great, but actually that was one of the things it did quite well for. The gunplay in that game is fine. I thought it anyway. The thing of Deathloop is I just think the way you move, I just want that teleport ability. I hope you get that early, or I don't know if you have to earn it or if you just have it when you start, but that seems like very fun to use, and just sliding around. And yeah, I'm into the melee side of it, I think, more than the shooting side. I'm normally much more of a gun person than a melee person, but in this game it just looks fun to run around and cut off people up.
I mean, they are the people that made Dishonored, a game in which you primarily use a sword.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, and that ability, I don't know what it's called, the one where you like flip people up into the air and just kind of throw them off to the side.
Kinesis.
Yeah, I want to use that as much as possible. And yeah, I'm still into it because the way contrary to popular belief, Matt, I did actually read your preview, and I must have forgotten the part where Juliana was one of the targets, because the way you described it as that sort of supernatural hitman, that made me so much more excited for that game, because I didn't want another roguelike, which, to be fair, I still think they kind of didn't explain in that video. Like, the way they opened it, it still sounds like they're saying this is a roguelike. They didn't explain the parts of it that you said in your preview that made it sound good.
Yeah, I think the thing is, so that what you saw at State of Play was a small part of what was a much larger, kind of like probably twice as long, maybe three times as long preview. It was in there about an hour and a half, plus the opportunity to actually talk to two of the developers. So I think it's a very, very difficult game to explain even in a 10-minute marketing feature. And but I think the key thing for if you do feel it's a roguelike, it's definitely got elements of that, but they have very much told me, like, don't worry, there is kind of like a more traditional linear-ish fashion to the way that the story unfolds. It's just that there are some ideas from roguelikes in there.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know how much more we can really say about Deathloop, because we haven't learned anything that new from that trailer. I still think it looks great. I mean, I just want to play it now. Yeah, I don't know if we really... I don't have much more to say about Deathloop other than I want to play it.
Well, then move on.
Yeah, exactly.
Get out of here, Deathloop.
Exactly. I just pray it isn't one of those games that comes out and people are like, I hope it does well for Arkane just because they are so good. I hope people aren't kind of sick of it by the time it comes out, in a way, if you know what I mean.
I don't think
but
they
maybe
will
be. No, I hope not. Another game, Lost Judgment. I completely forgot that there was a sequel to Judgment. And I never actually finished Judgment, and it made me think I should go back and finish Judgment because I was enjoying it a lot.
It's weird. I've played dozens of hours of multiple Yakuza games, and I have never finished one because they are so fucking big that I just get to a point where I'm like, I've got other things to do, Kazuma. I'm sorry. From what I've seen of Lost Judgment, it doesn't look like the one that's going to break that cycle for me, but I'm absolutely sure I will play it and enjoy it for 30 hours and be in the first chapter. I know some people are very skeptical about this, but I'm not sure how wide it went that the future of the Yakuza series in general is that Yakuza is now turn-based combat, it is an RPG, and Judgment is the action game combat. What I would like to see with this one is, because a lot of people criticized the action in the original Judgment, I'd like it to get towards where it was in Yakuza 0 with like lots of different fighting styles, lots of more messing about with that side of stuff. That would be where I kind of... I think that's where Judgment can really stand out, as well as like maybe increasing a bit of the kind of courtroomy stuff. Like, I wouldn't mind it being a tiny bit more Ace Attorney.
But it still looks gorgeous. Exactly. The one thing that stood out to me is it looks very nice. Like, that's the one thing of the Yakuza games, even the latest Yakuza, like a Dragon Knight, doesn't look great. It looks fine, but
But it's the character models. Like, the Dragon Engine gets character models so right. On major characters, they look fucking nuts. It's so good.
But like, Lost Judgment looked like a step up to me, and just, like, the environments looked a lot nicer. It looked much more like a next-gen game. I don't know, I'll probably do the same as you, Joe. I'll play it for a few hours, be like, oh, this is really cool, and then never get anywhere near finishing it. But, like a Dragon, I was really enjoying. I've played about 10 hours of, and I should, no reason to stop, but I just get to that point where I'm like, I don't know.
The problem with Like a Dragon was I got really far in that for me in Yakuza games, or Yakuza games, and then I did the business building mini game, and I played it for about 15 hours until I'd finished it, and then I was like, oh, I've finished this game. Like, I've now got too much money, like I've got billions of yen coming in, and I just felt like a sense of completion that made me go, He's probably fine now. He's going to live a happy, rich life, and I can leave him. But
No. That's kind of what I did with Mass Effect 2 last night. I was like, oh, I'll play for an hour. I've got an hour here to fill. I'll play some Mass Effect 2. I spent 40 minutes just doing probing of planets. Enjoy it. Then I was like, well, don't really have time for a mission now.
So I'm playing Mass Effect 2 at the moment as well. Keep all my planet scanning duties for the weekend so I can stick a podcast on. Luckily, there's always a good podcast I like that drops on a Friday, and then I can listen to that while spinning planets around, throwing probes at them.
You're saying you listen to this podcast every Friday?
I'm not referring to this podcast. I'm referring to another video games podcast.
But I've got like 120,000 Palladium now, wherever it is. No use for it. I've just got
Is it Palladium sniper rifles? Get your sniper rifles done.
Is it Palladium Platinum? I've got Iridium Platinum.
So, Element Zero.
Element Zero. Mm. Yeah, there we go. It's just relaxing. It's a good game. Very good game. I just did quite a big bit in it. Anyway, I don't want to spoil Mass Effect 2 for people, because some people like me are playing it for the first time. We also had, like I said, the Death Stranding Director's Cut, some details. Not only details in that show, but 3 minutes ago, I've just looked on Twitter, Kojima just tweeted, oh, and there's a very hard mode too. They're adding very hard modes to it as well.
Lovely stuff.
There were some mad things in that trailer. are they making it more of an action game? It seems like they're adding a few more weapons to it. I don't know.
It just feels like I think they realised that the action, like combat and stuff in that game, was kind of clunky and irritating. Mm-hmm. So just make it a bit better for people who are going back for some reason. But there's lots of things in that trailer where I was like, oh, I would have really liked that if I was playing Death Stranding now. But nothing in that trailer made me go, I've got to play Death Stranding again. Like, the cargo catapult looks wicked, but I'm not going to go back and play another 60 hours of fucking twaddle to get it. Like, it's not the same, something I need in my life.
The same with the buddy robot. I like the look of him. And they've added, like, a racetrack in there as well. Like, a customizable racetrack you can try. Like, I only got a few hours into Death Stranding. Now, I wasn't hating it. I was find it fine. This is making me think, do you know what, maybe when this version comes out, maybe it'll be in a great place. I don't know.
It's another paid upgrade, though.
I don't see. I'm not like £10. I think. I don't think that's terrible.
But it's terrible in a world where on the other console nothing costs £10.
Comparatively, I know what you mean. Comparatively, it's not great. Like there was back like last generation that this wasn't happening at all. You just had to buy it again for 70, like 50 quid, didn't you? So
but that doesn't make this better. Like, no. That just makes it worse in the past.
I don't know. Like. Maybe this one, there's not as much new in it for £10. The Ghost of Tsushima one, I don't really mind, because you're getting a whole new experience. You're basically getting, like, a quarter of the game again.
No, 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 that's a different thing. You're paying £20 for the full upgrade, but people have worked out, if you're just going director's cut to director's cut, so just getting PS5 enhancements, that's £9. Like, none of the extra content for that money. It's just, like, haptic feedback.
Well, that's definitely not worth it.
Yeah, that's what bothers me. It's like, come on, guys. And I haven't actually looked into whether the £10 for Death Stranding one is director's cut to director's cut, or whether that's a full... If it's PS4 to PS5, but I get... I don't know.
I think it's maybe slightly better. I've only had a criticism, but I think that there's only director's cut for Death Stranding. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, but whereas, obviously, with...
Tsushima.
What you're effectively getting is there's the PlayStation upgrade, and then there's what is effectively an expansion pack, right? Yeah. The expansion pack I'm fine with paying money for, not that I will, because I don't like Ghost of Tsushima, but I think charging money for haptic feedback is bullshit.
All I'm saying is Kojima should be paying me to go back to Death Stranding. If I like, there's a part of me where if it was a free upgrade, I think, and I got to keep my save game, and I just, because I've written about this before, the end game of Death Stranding is the game I wanted it to be, where I wasn't being interrupted with rubbish. It was just a fun, like, hiking sim. If I could do that for free, maybe I'd go back and be like, well, I'll muck about with these new systems for, like, 2 hours, and then maybe I'll leave it. But I'm just not going to pay to do it.
Oh, well, there we go. I might jump back in. There's lots of games coming out this autumn, though, isn't there?
So, same time as Deathloop, isn't it? Like, it's within that window. I've got better stuff to be doing.
I will personally be going back to Ghost, because I liked it more than you think. And the expansion, I'm up for a whole new, basic chapter of that game. And there's new Legends stuff. And I've said before, Ghost of Tsushima Legends is absolutely brilliant.
So, I have to say, there is a broken bit of me that just wants to see the new Ghost of Tsushima bit and not necessarily play it, just look at it, because it
shall
is
I,
nice.
I screen looking. Share for you?
No, don't think so.
Okay. No, that's a path you don't want to go down. They also showed off some indies, which they said they would. We got another look at Fist, which I remember being revealed. It feels like a year ago now, maybe over a year. I feel like we were in the office. Mad game with a rabbit with a giant fist. I like the look of that, like the style of that game a lot. I'm like, side scrollers aren't my favourite genre of game, but these do look. I'm into this. I'll give it a go. There's like some mad animals.
It's like Cyberpunk Redwall.
Exactly.
I don't know. There's something that puts me off it, and I can't work out what it is. It might just be the way it moves. I'm not sure. But I do, when I get like a Metroidvania-y, action-y game that really works for me, I do often get really into them. And I could see that happening here. But I'm still not quite sure about this one.
You just talking animals has always freaked you out, hasn't it?
You really
question the world.
Because I don't want to know what animals are saying about me. Because I say a lot of shit about animals. So they might come back at me hard. I don't need that.
Have you got a favourite talking animal, Matt?
Favourite talking animal? No, I don't.
What?
I like come that on. Question. I want to know what my favourite talking animal is.
I like Roger Rabbit a lot. Is he a cartoon? Does he have to be a real animal? Like, oh, it's got to be Paddington. It's got to be Paddington.
Ah, Paddington.
Good hard stare.
He's done it.
Exactly. Paddington 3 in production soon.
Very excited.
Exciting?
Very excited for that.
Ooh, ooh. We also got another look at Sifu, which again just looks very, very cool.
Delayed. That's sad.
Delay till early 20. But I like the way they did it, like the age thing in the game, the way they did it at the end of the trailer.
That was clever.
It was a nice way of doing it.
I'm slightly concerned about the age thing. Like, I don't know why it makes sense. I don't know
in
this.
In what sense?
Like, I get that it's the roguelike thing, right? Is that when your thing resets, you become older.
Mm.
Is there like actually a gameplay impact on that? Because otherwise I can't really see what the point of it is.
Is it just telling the story? You're just getting older?
I want that system to have an impact, basically. Like, I want it to be pushing something other than, like, my character model gets greyer hair. Like, I want there to be something interesting about it.
Someone's getting slower. Wildermyth. I just to digress, because last week we talked about Wildermyth. Just so everyone knows, it's fucking incredible. I've played 3 full campaigns of it in the last week.
I did hear you speaking about it, and I feel like I've got to play it.
It's so good.
It sounds very good.
But to your point about age in that game, I had a mystic who got the same thing you were talking about, Matt, where she started turning into a crystal person. Mm-hmm. And by the end of my last campaign, she was 98 years old, half crystal, and she could only move 2 spaces a turn, and that would take up her entire turn. Like, she was so old.
But I bet she hit like a motherfucker.
Oh my god, she hit like a motherfucker, and she had so many spells. It was great.
That's the thing. Maybe Sifu, like, the older you get, the slower you get, but the harder you can punch, and there's like a peak at around, I don't know.
Mm.
When's the physical peak of Sifu? I don't know.
I just want to do something cool with that. I just don't want it to be like my character model gets grizzly, because it doesn't sort of make a lot of sense. I know it's video games, but
might be a cool visual thing. I just want to know, like, does that mean there's a limit on the amount of runs? Like, do you get to like 80 and are like, well, game over? I don't know.
Well, obviously, like, they're not going to do that.
The amount of times that I've played Hades and like died in Hades, like, my character in that game would be like 480 by this point.
Who knows? I'm into it. Just the style of it is just amazing.
Just to go back to Wildermyth for 1 second, I just realised there's one more thing I wanted to say that Matt didn't address last week. There is a spell in that game where you can enchant a bookcase and then fill an enemy's head with so much knowledge that their brain explodes. And that is the coolest spell in the world.
Okay, anyway. I'm definitely going to download this game this afternoon.
Carry on.
Is it Steam only, by the way?
No, it's on Mac. Well, it's Steam only, but you can get it on Mac. I can get it on Mac.
Yeah. I can play it on my laptop. I don't have to.
I can get it on Mac.
Play it at a desk. Oh, my lord. I'm into that. One more game we're going to talk about from the state of play. We're not going to talk about everything, because some of it was frankly guff. One game that did look interesting. As soon as I started, I was like, this is a Joe game. I'm wrong.
Yes, correct.
Jet the Far Shore.
Yeah.
I've put a lazy little description here. No Man's Sky meets the Outer Wilds, which I don't think is miles off.
I don't know how much actual Outer Wilds it will be. They haven't really gone into what exploration means in this game, and that's actually quite exciting to me. I love that you diagnosed this as a Joe game, because it is. I was watching it like, this looks fucking wicked. I love games about going quietly around on an alien planet and finding and scanning things. That's what I want to do. It looks a bit rubbish, though, doesn't it? Like, graphically.
I know. It's not graphically the most exciting game. Like, especially, we talk about character models. Didn't look great. But that concept of, I like it, it's just relaxing. There was a little bit of action, it looked like.
But it seems to be, like, escape action. So it's like, get around stuff rather than engage with
fighting
stuff.
Yeah.
I love Super Brothers Sword and Swore, sorry. I thought that was really fun. And I hope this has a bit of that, like, cosmic element. I'm hoping there's a bit of that 70s, like, is God an algorithm type bullshit. Like, I want to know. Like, I want it to get weird, basically. And I was kind of intrigued by the idea that you're maybe doing this from a home base. Like, there's a bit where you see the ship come back in and dock in a place with a load of other ships. And so I'm kind of into the idea of maybe that's how it does its Metroidvania-y structure, where you have to upgrade a ship to be able to go further before coming back, or different territories or different terrains or biomes or something like that. There's just a lot there that intrigues me. I just like chill exploration games with maybe horrible consequences.
Exactly. I'm into it as well. I had a similar thoughts. Do you think? I think the one thing I need in those games that maybe you don't is I need an actual good story. Maybe you. I think you're more happy to just explore and that be your story. I don't know if I'm putting words into your mouth.
I think I can enjoy that. But then if you look at Outer Wilds, that game has an incredible story for those who go looking for it, if you see what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
That's that, and that is where I think, where I kind of expect Jet the Far Shore to do something. Because there's something in that home base looks like a horrible industrial nightmare, so I'm wondering whether it's like, are we the baddies type situation, you know, are we colonizing and destroying a nice planet, and there's something that would obviously come with its own storyline of some kind.
We tend to do that in half of sci-fi stories, to be fair. Just go to a planet and ruin it. Our own, aren't we?
Oh god.
Anything else from that state of play anyone wants to talk about? Anything?
I didn't think there was much else that I need to discuss. I mean, there's that game where you can have a rubber duck and hit people or whatever it is.
Arcadeageddon, was that one?
No, was that the Hunter's Arena?
Oh, Hunter's Arena Legends, I think.
Something like that.
Or is it Hunter's Legends Arena? It's those three words in an order.
Is that the battle royale, melee fighting game thing? A lot of this state of play where it was just like, I've seen all of this before and I don't know how this is different to anything I've played before.
I wasn't into that. But, right, well, why don't we talk about stuff we've been actually playing and watching.
Okay.
Both me and Matt have watched the first in a trilogy of horror films on Netflix called Fear Street. Fear Street 1994 was part one. I think Fear Street 1978 is the second one. That's out today.
Something like that, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Late 70s.
Yeah.
They're R.L. Stine books, the creator of Goosebumps, but they're slightly more adult.
They were kind of teenagers, the books were. Yeah,
yeah. Mm-hmm. They're not your typical Goosebumps stuff. But I don't know how you felt about this film, Matt. I was really excited because it was getting a lot of good buzz and a lot of good reviews, and I really liked the trailer. I watched the film and I kind of thought, it's fine.
I fucking loved it. I think it's one of the best films I've seen this year.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, there we go. Why?
So, like you say, it's R.L. Stine, so it's a very fun horror, but it takes itself, like, internally quite seriously, which I like. And it starts off as a fair homage to Scream. Like, I'm fairly sure that I looked up the
it absolutely is.
Yeah, the music, the guy that put the music together is the composer for Scream, so it's got that kind of link to it. I think it finds its way into its own sort of thing later, but the thing I really like about it is that it's got a mythology to it that doesn't require 100 films to build up. It's just got this really cool kind of idea. It puts it out quite plainly. It links to other horror properties, for lack of a better word. I don't know how we call them now that doesn't sound like marketing wank. That is quite easy to kind of look at and understand where they're going for it and just get on board with it. And then I think as it ramps up towards the end, it has got some really good kills towards the end. I will give it that.
It's got one of the best kills I've seen in a long time in a horror film. If you don't know like what the actual like concept of it is, it's basically part one is just it's basically a Scream or a Nightmare on Elm Street
slasher.
Sort of horror. It's a slasher, but it's kind of cool. And this is where I think I didn't maybe like it as much as you. I thought it was kind of it couldn't 100% decide what it was in my mind. Like, I thought it was kind of almost caught between trying to be one of those films and trying to be a parody of one of those films. I didn't think it quite nailed whether it wanted to play some stuff for laughs or if it wanted to be an actual horror, because at no point did I find it scary. It's not a scary film at all, I don't think, despite it being rated an 18. But I suppose there's some gory bits,
there's one of the best slash worst kills. Like, I really had to look away. There was some real...
Oh, I was soaking it up. And I think the one that drops today is pretty much it's a Friday the 13th concert. It's a summer camp in the 70s. And that was the thing I was like... The thing I was like, I wanted it kind of to do its own thing slightly more. I thought it was almost trying to be those slightly too much.
See, that's not what I go in for R.L. Stine for. Like, I loved the Goosebumps books when I was a kid and obviously didn't get them as a kid because you're a kid who isn't allowed to watch old films. But when you look back and look at how much of the Goosebumps books are based on, they're ripping off very, very famous horror movies. and recreating them for young children, basically, kind of like Slappy the Dummy is basically Chucky, right? And there's all sorts of runs there. And I think this does essentially the same shtick that Stein is good at, but it does it with the ability, like, okay, all of these characters could potentially get murdered. There's none of the lack of peril that Goosebumps has. And so I thought it was, like, it is Goosebumps with an 18 rating, and I thought that was really, really cool.
If you're going in for that, that's exactly what you'll get, I think. I think maybe I was just, I don't know. I don't think it's bad at all. I think it's good. I think, like, you know, if I was reviewing, I'd probably give it, like, a 7, personally. Mm-hmm. I thought it was good. I was just, I don't know, I just wanted that, I was expecting that extra thing more that maybe it didn't have for me. But like I said, there's two more parts to come. It's part of a trilogy, and there's like a through line to do with this sort of like... I don't want to spoil what the through line is, but there's a cool thing. And I will say, it has a very good payoff at the end of the first film. It's a very good ending. So it's worth sticking around to, because it's an hour and 45, which isn't overly long for a film at all, don't get me wrong, but I did feel like it did kind of sag. Like, I thought the first half was a little slow for me, and I think the second half is very good. I think it picks up really well.
The first half's definitely a little bit more slower moving, as horror films tend to almost be a bit too slow moving at the start in order to build tension. But I think, as I say, like, that ending and leading into the next one very much ties into this kind of cool mythology I think it establishes. And as I say, I like that, like, it takes that side of it seriously, even though it's clearly quite fun from the outside. I also like its characters are really likable, even though, like, a bunch of them are little shitbags.
One of them I couldn't get along with, the guy who's in their like group,
Simon,
their
is
group.
It?
I think his name is Simon, unfortunately. So just didn't get along with him, but I liked everyone else.
Yeah, I like them all. They're all kind of like very of that slasher sort of template, but they all felt like people that I could have met at school. They got that like slightly more realistic vibe, and I also like it. It's quite kind of like, it's got a nice LGBTQIA kind of story that sort of runs through the center of it, which I think is a nice update on like those books were, because I had a look, because I've never read the books, but couldn't believe that this could have been a direct adaptation of them, and it's not. It takes like the Fear Street setting and ideas and kind of rebuilds it as a new thing, so it doesn't feel 1990s dated in that way, but does have all of those 90s homages to it.
I'm gonna watch the other two. I'm excited to see him. Like, second one, like we said, it looks like it's pretty much a Friday the 13th take on it, and then the third part I believe is 1666, which I can see what that's going to be now once like stuff is revealed in the first one that makes sense as to what this is going to be. But I'm excited to see, because it kind of, like I said, the payoff of the first one is good, and I kind of want to see how they come back to that in a way. So I'm intrigued to see where it goes, but I enjoyed it. I don't really have much more to say about this.
That's it.
I enjoyed it. Are you going to watch it, Joe?
I definitely am. I was going to ask, should I just wait for all three to come out and like watch them together, or are you enjoying the fact that there's a little gap to think about it?
I mean, they are like almost 2 hour films a piece, so it's not that you can just watch them. They're not, you know, like hour long. I don't know. I didn't feel that one didn't end. I was like, I've got to put on the next one. Like, they are separate films. I think they're not that. They're not like one through story that you're like, can't wait to see what's next. That's from my, I don't know, Matt might have watched them all in a day for all I know.
I quite like, so I watched this with someone over kind of like a virtual kind of like movie night kind of situation. And I like that, because we do it every Saturday, I like that I've now got another one, and we've been doing horror films anyway. We've been watching the Conjuring movies, and this kind of felt it nicely weaved into that kind of structure we've got. So I do like that they're dropping week by week, and it's something that I don't think there's not a movie system that's done this before, is there? Like, this is the beauty of Netflix, I suppose.
Genuinely the concept intrigued me and like excited me more than the
subject
films. I love that they're trying out stuff like this and just kind of going like, well, let's try doing the form of these things as well as the function.
Like, is that thing, like, you know how Marvel is effectively a TV show that's told through movies? Like, like that, because horror is naturally like lower budget, you can kind of set up a project and go, we've got this amount of money, we can split that into three, we can make these three movies, and we can drop them week by week to create that sort of televisual movie sort of storytelling.
So it's got that Netflix look. It's not overly filmic. It has got, it basically looks like a Stranger Things. Like, they could easily have released it as a 6-part TV series, to be fair. Like, I don't think that would have taken away of it. So it's interesting they have done it as 3 films. But yeah, I was into it. There's nothing stopping you from watching it in 6 parts either, because it's Netflix. Isn't that the joy of that? Joe, you've been playing something that about a year and a half ago we were all saying is brilliant, and you finally listened to us.
Yeah.
Why?
This is Final Fantasy VII Remake, which will kick off a trilogy of things that we have played that are really old. I've just realised on this. I got the Integrate upgrade, because I was like, I just never got round to even downloading the game, because it was massive, and I was just like, oh, I can't really be arsed. And then, because I'm very privileged, I got access to Integrate, and went, all right, this is when I'm going to do this. And then it sat there for weeks. And then yesterday I was like, I have nothing to play because I've done Ratchet and Clank and I've been really enjoying playing like an hour of something every morning. And I know this is a substantially bigger project in that regard. But I just turned it on and started messing about with it. And yes, it is really good. I'm in the first sort of open area getting side quests to do. So I'm about like 2 or 3 hours in. And just what I wasn't expecting is the combat to feel so good. Like, I really
the combat is the best thing about it. It's amazing.
I didn't think it would translate to me that well. And I did like Final Fantasy XV's take on combat to a certain extent, but this feels like such a refinement on that idea. And the switching works really well. And I think you were saying, Matt, when you were talking about the Yuffie stuff, that Yuffie?
Yeah, Yuffie. I used to pronounce it Yuffie. I think it's Yuffie.
That you missed the opportunity to start switching between characters. Mm-hmm. And that, because I was playing just sort of as Cloud, and once Tifa came in, I was still playing as Cloud to a certain extent, and I'd given her materia that was like auto stuff, so I was kind of using her as an AI. And then I fought like a sub-boss creature, and suddenly sort of had to start going like, okay, I really have to start using these characters in tandem. And then once you start doing it, it's just like, fuck, you can immediately, like, everything just suddenly opens and you suddenly start going like, oh, I totally see how this is going to work as this game goes on. And it's really cool. Like, I would love to see other games take on this same idea, because it's so fluid and it has the action game feeling, but it gives you enough strategy to play with. I know I'm saying stuff people said a year and a half ago, by the way.
But a lot of people will be picking up for the first time now or thinking about doing it because there is this new version. I still need to actually download it because I haven't played the Yuffie stuff yet. I haven't played the intermission stuff, which I do want to do, because I was surprisingly, like, as somebody who hadn't played Final Fantasy VII before when the remake came out, like, I was surprised how much I loved it. Like, it was one of my very favourite games of last year, and yeah, I want to play that extra few hours now, and
Yeah,
I'm well into it.
The PS5 version looks really good as well. Like, I think there's elements of it where you're like, oh, this isn't quite, you know, it's not Ratchet and Clank good looking. But there are elements of it where you're like, it really has benefited from the upgrade. The only thing is, they've got these backgrounds, right? And I know people talked about the backgrounds, but there are still bits in this where you're like, that looks like a fucking painting. Like, it looks so weird. You look at the horizon, and you're like, that is so obvious. It's like you're in the Truman Show. Like, it's really weird.
Don't look at that. Just ignore that.
They have a real big problem where, because obviously it's entirely set in Midgar, which is a city with a plate above you. And when you look up, it's very clear that it's a flat texture that has just been put on, for lack of a better term, a big disc that's hanging over the map.
I did really like Barrett calling it a pizza.
Yeah.
That made
classic line from the original. Are you liking, because we played it through, right, Joe?
Yeah.
Are you liking seeing the translation?
I mean, my memory is so fucked that there are bits where I'm like, I do half remember this, but I'm not really sure. I think the voice acting is as good as I expect from a game of this kind.
Sure.
I don't think it's great. I am enjoying that it's a voiced game, and I do like, how it's used open world hub ideas amongst the stuff. Like, I think that works really well. And there have been a few times where I've walked past something and I'm like, I fucking remember this. That's good. eggs and chips and all that. but yeah, that's it's good stuff. I'm really enjoying it. Yeah. I wasn't expecting to like it as much.
Exactly. You're still at the point as well where I was like, oh, this is good, but like, haven't got to the stuff where I was like, okay, yeah, this is unbelievably good.
Good. So, I'm excited about that.
It'll kick off.
Also, I should say, because I love scanning in everything, I love the assess materia, I love getting it to use it on everything. Oh, it's great. Scanning's the best.
I don't even think I used assess once in that game.
Import, especially in the later boss, is really important.
Yeah. I just winged it. Just natural.
Just pretty fucking good at the game, isn't it, though?
Just good at it. Yeah. Well, talking about playing things we should have played a long time ago, that's kind of been a bit of my mantra this year. I've gone back, obviously, with Mass Effect, righted some wrongs there, halfway through doing all that. And you know what? I was talking with our good friend Daniel Krupa, and he was like talking about how much, when all the Gears games came out, he always used to play them co-op, and he has great memories. And I was like, do you know what? I've never played a single one of them. So we decided we're going to play Gears of War together. So I'm playing Gears of War for the first time ever. We played it last night, played about 2 hours, got the Ultimate Edition, which came out in 2015, which it looks all right. It's a little bit muddy, and it plays a little bit, I don't know, it's a little
bit soft fine. These days, isn't
it? Yeah. But really enjoying it. I'm about to tell a lot of people that have played Gears of War for 15 years that Gears of War is good, but I'm enjoying it. I didn't realise, so it's kind of one of those series I've kind of never really taken any notice of. If you know, it always gets, there's trailers out and they look cool, but I've never played one.
You're a PlayStation boy, aren't you? That's the...
It's like I just never had an Xbox at the time when that and Halo were like the biggest thing in the world, basically. So I just never had a chance, and the tone of it surprised me a bit. In my head, it was always much more like serious and dour and grey, where it's actually it's quite funny.
It's a Schwarzenegger film is what it is.
Yeah. And yeah, I've been enjoying that a lot, and we just absolutely did in a berserker. Just done it. And the Hammer of Dawn is very fun. I'm telling a lot of people here very obvious things
we've
about
done,
Gears
but
of War.
I think this is going to be this section. But the Hammer of Dawn still feels great. Like, that's I actually really didn't like Gears of War when I first played it, but that really stuck with me. I was just like, this is really good shit.
I'm a sucker, just like we were talking about Outriders when it came out. Like, I'm a sucker for any game where you kill something and explodes into 100 like chunks on the floor.
Like, a lot of good stuff.
It just feels good. Yeah. I'm big into it, and I can't wait to play more of them. I'm just worried that, so obviously Gears of War 1 got the Ultimate Edition treatment, kind of the remaster. I don't know if I'm going to go to 2 and be like, oh, this is a step down.
Yeah, because you're going to have to play an Xbox 360 game, right? Like, I don't think there'll be a huge amount of difference. And also, like, 2 and 3 are better. Like, they, in terms of mechanically, they get better. They also, some of the set pieces in those games just have a wonderful sense of absurdity while still being very grim and sort of gothic, which I do like about it. There's some really cool weapons by the time you get to 3 as well.
I can't, the feeling of getting that active reload spot on is a good feeling. And when you get it wrong, it is one of the worst feelings. Because I'm still in that moment where I'm learning, I'm like, and I panic, and even though I know it's far too late to do it, I still press reload, and I should have just left it. And I'm just like, no, I've got to do it, I've got to press reload. Daniel's teased me like one of his favourite weapons in any game, I think the torque bow, and I'm going to have a great time with that.
That's
so
good.
I can't wait. But yeah, looking forward to playing more Gears of War. So yeah, this is me in 2021 talking about how good Gears of War 1 is.
Well, I just did Final Fantasy 7, so...
Yes.
I mean,
Matt, what have you got?
Better round this out with Halo then, hadn't I? games that are, essentially... They've got to be 20 years old now, haven't they, the first one? I think Halo 1 was 2001, 2002?
Oh, God. I don't want to think about it.
So, yeah, I have been replaying Halo in preparation for Halo Infinite, because it felt about time. Like, there were some that I hadn't played since they came out, so it was like, let's go back. So, Halo 1. Cardi, I know that... Oh, you haven't tried Halo 1 yet, have you?
So... The only Halo I've played.
It's a bit
again,
of reach.
This is my like dark cloud over what I haven't played. I've only ever I've played like most of Halo Reach.
Right.
That's my extent of Halo.
So you started in chronological order. You were going right back to the start. Sorry. So I started. I'm playing it in game release order, and Halo 1. Oh boy, has not aged that well. So I think for anybody that is thinking of doing this, like if you've just picked up like a Series X or a Series S and you're like, I'm going to play through them all on Game Pass, Halo 1, I think it's all like, Joe, you said a really good idea before this podcast started, which is play up to the Silent Cartographer, which is maybe about the third or fourth main mission in that game.
I think it's the third?
Mm-hmm. Which does open on, basically, Halo does Omaha Beach, which is very cool.
It's fucking amazing. Mm-hmm. Oh, it's fourth, you're right, it's fourth. The fourth.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That mission is... It's still so good. Yeah. Like, it's still such a great set piece. I love it.
Mm-hmm. I think all the money in Halo 1 is very much upfront, because I loved those first four missions. Mm. And then what you do is you get to a point where you're playing through an awful lot of the same level design that is just repeated almost what feels like infinitely in such an unintuitive manner that means that when you get into the next room, you're like, is this the room I was just in and I accidentally went in through the wrong door?
That's my abiding memory of doing the Combat Evolved Anniversary. Mm-hmm. I did that like years and years ago. I reviewed that and I remember feeling like I was fucking up when actually Halo had fucked up so much. And even with a visual upgrade, it's still hard to tell where you are in all of those levels in the later game.
And yeah, so kind of like my first like session that I did with it, where I just loved the opening and it was such a big nostalgia play for me. And I can remember all the fucking lines that like Keyes and Cortana are saying. That was great. But yeah, once you get past that opening segment. So if you are playing Halo for the first time, maybe just play those, then read what happens on Wikipedia, because not a lot actually happens after that.
And
you will just be playing. Yeah. You will just have to go through identical rooms shooting identical enemies that fuck you up far too quickly. Then you get to Halo 2, which the what was that? That was not the anniversary. Was that like the collector's edition they did?
I think it is an anniversary.
Is it called the anniversary edition?
I think so. Yes, it is. Yeah.
Right. That, good God, it feels like an entire different era of Halo within the space of a few years of development. So it's a really good remaster that has all of the cutscenes done by Blur, who I think everybody loves what Blur does.
So Damon Albarn, Graham Coxon, the whole lot. Yeah. Those guys.
But you get like these beautiful CG cutscenes because Halo 2 is the one where like a lot more of like the mythology and the story is brought in, and it's genuinely quite kind of captivating if you like that slightly pulpy kind of classic sci-fi novel sort of nonsense. But the level design is just substantially way ahead of what was in Halo 1 and feels really fun all the way through, and you get to follow like a really cool story. But then you get to 3, which is the one that came out when I was at uni and which was kind of like my onboarding for Halo properly as a campaign sort of game, and that is I don't think it's aged a day, basically. Like, it feels smaller scale compared to modern FPS games. But boy, it's just got a real good sense of pace and a real good sense of how it introduces weapons to you. The difference between kind of like the level design from where bits where you get the warthog, where it gets to be nice and open, bits where you're a bit more confined, where it's got like really interesting the way it funnels enemies at you. And also has that section with the scarab tank, where there's two scarab tanks that land on a beach. If you don't know what a scarab tank is, they are about the size of six buildings put together. And then you get a helicopter and you get to fly onto the back of them, go inside, blow up their reactors and fly off again.
It is the video game dream of the AT-AT fights on Hoth. Like, it's AT-AT or AT-ST? I can't remember which one.
AT-ATs,
yeah. Yeah, the big sheep boys. It's like, it is... Someone looked at that and was like, we're going to fucking do that properly in a game. And it is amazing.
It's just, and that, like, I finished Halo 3 in two sittings. Like, I just kept playing through it. And it's not the longest game in the world, but it's about 8 or 9 hours. So that's two big 4-hour sittings. And just loved every moment of, like, it spins out that story and brings the end to the original trilogy in such like a satisfying way for, let's say, it's got mythology, but it's never overly complicated. It always feels quite tight and well put together. And now I'm playing ODST, which is obviously the little prequel they did to 3, which again just introduces a load of really cool ideas. It's set at night in this Blade Runner-esque city where you play this guy that's going around what is effectively like a mini open world. It's not particularly deep or detailed, but you get to explore this city on your own terms, just looking for clues as to what happened to your squad that all got like scattered the night before. And that, it's got such a sense of atmosphere that's so different from Halo, because in Halo you play a super soldier, and then in ODST you get to play kind of like, you're just a dude with a silent submachine gun trying to survive an alien apocalypse.
Mm.
And so that feels like a really cool little bit of experimental Halo on the side. So yeah, that's as far as I am, and I'm just absolutely loving it. Like, it's just a reminder of how good Bungie were at their peak.
Yeah. I'd like,
maybe I should
Reach is the one I actually remember so little of in the grand scheme of things that, like, I do quite want to do the whole set just to get to Reach and, like, feel like it did back then.
Well, Reach will be what, like, I probably will finish ODST tonight, so then it will be on to Reach, and then I'll have done all of the Bungie ones. But yeah, like, it's one of those where it's like, some games do have a long life in them because they did what they did so well. I think Halo is probably, for me, one of those series. Like, aside from the first one, like, I think the other ones have aged really gracefully.
Yeah. Are you playing it solo as well, Laura?
Playing it co-op.
Okay, cool. See, that's the thing I've appreciated. Although I do, don't get me wrong, like, PlayStation, I love their exclusives and the stories of their games, I do appreciate that all those Xbox games were always co-op. You could always play them with a friend. Like, not that, you know, like, game, like, The Last of Us is a completely different game if you play it with a friend. But, like, I do appreciate that they've always had that run through of, like, these massive games, like, it's all about playing with other people. I like that a lot.
Like, there is a world where someone plays as Atreus in God of War, and it's still the same great game, but you can just play it with someone else. You know what I mean? Like, there's a version where they didn't stick so strictly to that. And I think you're right. Like Ghost of Tsushima single-player co-op, or campaign co-op, would maybe have changed how I approached that game, like how much I enjoyed that game. Because I would have been...
certainly would for me.
Yeah, like experiencing that place with someone would mean a lot more, I think.
I think that's why I love Legends so much, because that is kind of what that is. Especially the raid stuff, which I bang on about all the time. But the Ghost of Tsushima raid stuff, like, you have to do a lot of grinding to get a high enough character to do it, but once you get there, it's good.
I do wonder if that kind of thing, it roots back to, obviously, Xbox and Microsoft put a lot of time into Xbox Live, and it was, like, such a huge part of the identity of the Xbox console that, like, the first-party games are kind of molded around that, whereas Sony obviously weren't as hot on the online race kind of that early on. And so they have kind of almost, like, that lineage has turned into, they make the blockbuster games that you enjoy on your own, and Xbox have something else. And that's why I like owning both of those consoles. I get very different experiences from both of them.
Exactly. That's what it's given me a big, like, it's weird because although I've never played Gears of War, I'm still feeling nostalgic playing it, 'cause it reminds me of playing, like, Spec Ops in Modern Warfare. Like, it's that sort of thing. Like, it's been a while since I played something like that, so I'm enjoying it a lot. Do you know what game I also enjoy playing with others but also crushing them in? The Endless Search. Inside, it's a UK IGN crew. Yeah, and the ones and twos. We got the games gonna play for you. Inside, I got a question for you. Hold tight, the DJ, we're coming through. Yeah, and the ones and twos. We got the games gonna play for you. Inside, I got a question for you. Is it in the search? I say I enjoy crushing people. I can't remember the last time I won one of these. Because we all know that Jesse is unbeatable when it comes to Rotten Tomatoes scores.
He's incredible. It's genuinely amazing. I'm doing The Endless Search this week, and I say I'm doing it, but actually what I'm doing is, well, it's your choice of two games from Daniel Warburton, who sent this in ages ago. So apologies, Daniel. We've just gotten to it. He has done, either you can play a good old game or go on Name 'em, and he's given us some big ass categories and a good selection of categories as well, or a game he says he's not sure if he says he's 100% sure he's made it up himself, so it's there you go. And he's called it Busy Bodies of Work, which
is
a game
is that?
Which is a game about guessing, getting as close as possible to the number of projects people are listed as having done on IMDb.
I feel like Go On Name 'em is maybe more fun, because the other one, although it sounds interesting, sounds more just like a guessing game. I don't know. It should be annoying.
I mean, there are some crazy numbers in there. But yeah. Okay. Let's do Go On Name 'em.
We'll I don't want to speak for both of us. I don't know how Matt feels.
Matt, keep it classic.
Let's keep it classic. Daniel, thank you for this. How many categories do we have? One, two, three, 5. Oh, he's done like 8. We'll see how we go. If we're running over. Best. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we're already at 55 minutes.
There's a couple.
Keep
I could,
it going.
There's a couple
keep
I can drop.
This is a 600 special.
Yeah, exactly. That's it. It's the 599.5 special of Go On Then. Keeping it loose. Letting loose with the lads.
Exactly.
Okay. I'll give you another choice. Do you want to start with something a little crazy or a little something more tradish for Go On Neymar?
I want you to just pick it.
Go on, tradish.
Whatever you...
Kratos of God of War fame has appeared in 17 games, and this includes cameos.
Jesus. Okay.
How many of those games can you name? Cardi, you're going first in this regard because you're on the left on my screen.
Mm-mm-mm.
If you don't know Go On Name Them, it's basically you bid for how many things in a category you can guess, and then you have to do it. There you go.
I'm going with 6. Just start with a 6.
Mm-hmm. Also, if any of these are wrong, this is all Daniel's fault. Don't blame me.
I think you're going to have to go on name them, because I can only think of, like... I don't know the names of a subset of games I'm thinking of, so...
I know what you mean.
Yeah, okay. Go on name them.
I know what you mean. I feel like I could have stretched to 7 or 8.
The subset of games that I'm thinking of, as if Cardi might be like, well, straight out the gate, Zelda!
Yeah. Amazing. Right, so I'm just going to take God of War 1, 2, 3, the original 1, 2, 3.
Correct.
And God of War 2018.
Correct.
I will also take PlayStation Battle Royale All-Stars, or All-Stars Battle Royale, whichever
PlayStation
way those
All-Stars.
Are worded.
Yeah.
And I've got a few choices here, and there's a couple that are risky, and I don't know if they'll count. I could go with another God of War, but I'm feeling a bit spicy.
That is mad from you. So, but
I feel like I should just play safe now. I don't know if this counts as him being in it or if it's a version of him, because it's technically not him. I'm going to go with Astro's Playroom.
Astro's Playroom is on Daniel's list, and we will accept it.
I've Ghost of Sparta as well, just as a...
Ghost of Sparta is there. I should have said, yes, there are cameos in here that are in different forms, but I kind of felt like it was giving away.
He was in a kart racer. Was he in, like, Little Big Planet Karting or Mod Nation?
He was in Mod Nation Racers. He was also in Hot Shots Golf Out of Bounds.
I did not know that.
He's in Little Big Planet as a sack boy. He's in Mortal Kombat 9, which I didn't know.
I knew it was in a fighting game. I was going to guess it was a Soul Calibur, but that didn't make much sense.
He's listed as being in Tearaway Unfolded. I don't remember that.
Wow.
Shovel Knight and Soul Calibur Broken Destiny, as well as
he's in a Soul Calibur.
Yeah, as well as all the spin-offs.
Is one of the PSP games called Chains of Olympus? Was I right on there? Yeah.
Ascension, Betrayal, Chains of Olympus, and Ghost of Sparta. All right.
Nice.
Here's one that I'm very excited about Matt getting involved in, because I reckon we could go on for ages. Although I don't know if he'll need to, and I think this might be... So, frankly, this is probably it's probably a little unfair on Cardi, but I'm just going with it because I love the category and the amount of work that's gone into it. There have been 134 different Avengers.
Oh, no.
How many, Matt?
I might as well
can
just concede.
Well, I certainly can't go that high.
I wasn't expecting to get all 137.
No. I was.
Let's start on a normal sense. Let's start with, like, 7.
Okay.
9.
I can try 10.
The thing with this is, I think you can make some pretty informed guesses on a lot of these.
Yeah. I'll go 12.
Hmm. There are some names on here that I am just like, who the fuck are you?
You know what? I'm gonna call you on that.
You're a knobhead.
I think this will be interesting.
I was just trying to drive you up. This is such cowardly defensive play.
I like
the Marvel Boy.
I like it. The Marvel Boy.
I was just, whatever you were going to say next, I was like, do it. Because I was like, I obviously know the obvious ones. Okay, let's go. Captain America.
Correct.
Iron Man.
Yes.
Spider-Man.
I'm checking the list just in case, because I'm not... Yes.
Is this in the comics, by the way, or is this across all life? Okay. Thor.
Correct.
Hawkeye.
Four.
Sorry.
Hawkeye is five.
Black Widow.
Six.
Hulk.
Seven.
Ant-Man.
Eight.
Black Panther.
Nine.
What other films have we got? Miss Marvel.
That's interesting. Yes, correct. 10.
That's probably some massive ones I'm missing out here in my head.
Matt, I think you should have gone more here.
Yeah. Captain Marvel.
11.
And let's go with Wasp, or the Wasp.
The Wasp? Is there? 12. Yeah. Cardi's got it.
There we go.
2-0.
Didn't say Wolverine, though, which I thought you would have gone straight in on.
Matt, no, I was just firmly thinking of that fight scene at the end of Endgame and thinking, who's in that?
Matt, can I name some comic book characters' names and you see if you can tell me anything about them?
Go on, then.
Who's Alexis the Protector?
Fuck knows. Let me have a look at what they look like so I recognise them.
Alexis the Protector. What a name.
I'm going to look at what they look like. Alexis the Protector.
Not a clue.
Absolutely
not a clue.
What about Charlie 27? Who's Charlie 27? I want a film about him.
Charlie. What happened to the other 26?
I think he's actually in a film.
Oh, he's in Guardians.
He has 11 times the muscle mass of a normal human.
Does he now? Well, good for
what
him.
About what about Jack of Hearts?
That one reminds. Yeah, I've seen this guy around.
Charlie 27 was played by Ving Rhames in Guardians. Amazing. I love Ving Rhames.
Who's Jack of Hearts then?
He's like, he's basically based off the playing card. Like, if you look at him, he's got that kind of weird playing card sort of arrangement.
That is very strange.
I never would have guessed that. I would not, you know.
That's why I know. He's in Avengers Disassembled, which is a really good comic if you haven't read that.
All right.
Probably more than 12 Avengers in it.
We're going off piste, boys. Cardi to guess first on 16 Magnum ice cream flavours.
Ooh.
Oh. See, are these what, current? Like, currently on shop shelf?
Was a list as of early June, so I'm assuming.
Okay.
Current.
You don't want to put ice creams on shelves. Mm-hmm.
Do you have to have the exact name that they used for the flavour, or could one describe what it was?
I will assess that case by case.
Okay.
Okay. I just recently had a Magnum last week that was unbelievably good. It's a new version. So that'll be on my list.
Anyway. I bet I can guess which one that was.
Oh, probably.
I saw a television advert for an unbelievably good Magnum, went to the shop to get it, and had to settle for a lesser Magnum.
I think we're all talking about the same Magnum here.
I'll give one away that isn't on here that I'm very sad to see go, which is the Peanut Butter Double, which was fucking astonishing stuff.
I'll just start with a light six again.
Six?
Six.
Yeah. I don't know if that was shock of low or high. I don't know.
I'll try 7 then.
Mm-hmm. Is that a bluff, though? Is that a bluff? I'm just think about what ones I have.
I fucking wish I wasn't self-isolating, because I want to go out for a Magnum straight away after this. I might get delivered.
I'm going with 8. 8 Magnums.
That is 50% of all Magnum ice cream flavours.
Quick maths.
Pretty astute kind of guy. I'm basically the Rachel Riley of the IGN UK podcast.
You don't want to be that.
Why?
She has views, mate.
Oh, does she?
Yeah.
Oh, that's a shame. I thought she was just good at maths.
So I can either at this point get you to call it, because that's all I can do, or I can just play into the game and be comedy and try and guess fucking 9 different ice creams.
You could just grow some balls. How about that?
Fucking hell.
Poke the bear. Poke him.
I'll try and do 9.
I like 9.
There you go. You can do that.
Are you going on and naming them? Okay.
Okay. So there's the classic. Which is a milk chocolate over a vanilla ice cream. Then there's the white.
Yes,
which is white chocolate. Then there's the almond.
Yes.
3.
I never choose that. Never go for that.
I do like it, though.
None of them are bad.
Yeah. There was my mum, whenever back at my parents, my mum's always got almond magnums. Nice. Good choice. Then they do a mint choc chip one, right?
They do.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's just listed here as mint.
It's just mint. Okay. It's mint and chocolate, isn't it? Then they do, I don't know quite what it's called, but this is the one that I really wanted to get, which is it's a vanilla covered in then a chocolate, then a raspberry sauce, and then a chocolate.
It's called
double raspberry.
Double raspberry.
Raspberry and double chocolate.
Right, okay.
That was listed that here as 5.
Looks like outer space chocolate.
I've had that. It's pretty good, but it's not the one I was thinking of. The dream.
I'm still. If Matt doesn't say it, I want to guess before you say what it is, because I'm just going on name alone.
Yeah.
Then there's the one which I had the other day, which is the millionaire. I think it's called, or the billionaire.
This is the one I thought, Cardi.
That's the daddy. That is the daddy.
The double gold caramel billionaire.
Yeah. It's basically like Caramac. It's so good. I love Caramac.
That's also got, like, is it an almond in it? There's something
it's
in
almost,
the
yeah, got like little crunchy bits of almost like butterscotch in it. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it was good.
Get it delivered.
I might actually get a Deliveroo for a Magnum. What's that, 6?
Yeah, so that's at 6.
Oh, this is huge, mate.
This is where I would be struggling. I had all those.
Yeah,
I think I have one more.
Is there a pistachio one?
I'm sorry to say that there isn't. That's it.
There may have been once upon a time, but there isn't
on the current list.
I was going between that and I should have just said, because there is a chocolate one, isn't there, where it's just chocolate all the way through.
I don't see it on here.
Do they still? The double caramel must still
double
be there.
Caramel double is still caramel. There. Shall I go through?
Do they still do the yogurt one? Because I used to really like the yogurt one.
They don't, and I like the yogurt one. I love all kinds of yogurt. almond, chocolate and crunchy cookies.
What?
Which I like the name of. Classic, double caramel, double chocolate and strawberry, double gold caramel billionaire, mint, raspberry and double chocolate. The most disappointing one, in my opinion, the ruby berries and cream. Not into it. Salted caramel and glazed almond, which sounds fucking astonishing. Ooh. Then this, I thought, might be your way up to 9 easily. Vegan almond, vegan classic, vegan sea salt caramel.
I didn't realise they'd gone the route of the good guys.
And white chocolate and cookies. And I'm going to order
they're good at
15 of those 16 for my lunch.
They are good at what they do. But they're almost like £2 a pop now. You have to buy them in multi-packs.
£2.20, mine was.
I know this is one of those things that people who get older say, but they're smaller.
They are definitely smaller. Especially like if we get them at home, you can get the 6-pack of mini ones. Yeah. And they're like, when I hold one of those, it looks ridiculous.
And policemen are getting younger as well. Policemen
exactly
keep getting younger.
It's insane. Anyway.
Okay.
Should we do
That's
a couple more.
Yeah, that is 3-0 to Cardi, so it is a win, I would say. Should we do two more?
Go on.
Let's stay on the same, a nice short one. The 7 flavours of Philadelphia cream cheese.
Oh, Jesus Christ. It's Matt first, isn't it?
It is Matt first. I really appreciate Daniel's commitment to adding the food ones. I love the food ones.
Yeah, that's good.
I could do 4, I think.
Oh, that's big.
I
don't even know what kind of a percent that is.
I don't buy Philadelphia, really.
Also, are they specifically flavours or are they also varieties?
I think for all variants.
All of these are, barring one, an ingredient name of...
Okay.
But we'll go case by case.
Mm-hmm.
I think I can only do 3. I'm gonna have to let you do 4. I can't push to 5. Okay. That's
mad. Bring it in.
Okay. So there's standard Philadelphia.
Standard slash basic, he's written.
Yeah. Right, okay, yeah. Then there's, I think it's called garlic and herb.
Garlic and herb is there.
Yeah. Then there's one with chili in, if I'm right.
Yes. Which...
is the two kind of chili in?
Well, it depends on what you're talking about here, I would say.
What are you on about?
Are we talking, like, actual bits of chili?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's fine. Jalapeno. That
jalapeno,
is there.
Jalapeno, there we go. Mm-hmm. Then there's... I'm going to take a gamble on the one that you said that's a bit weird. Is that Philadelphia Light?
No, that's not on here, but I'm going to let you go again, because that's fair.
Right, okay, like, so it's genuine.
That is a variant, not a flavour.
Yeah, okay, so it's genuine. Right, okay. My gamble here, then. Do they still do Philadelphia chocolate?
They
that's
don't.
I was thinking, is there a Nutella one?
Although, actually, I'm going to look it up, because I have...
the Capri one.
Is it still... Can I still buy Philadelphia chocolate? Is it there? Is it on sale in Asda right now? It is. I'm giving it to you. There's 8 flavours of Philadelphia, if you include. Yeah. But it is not Cadbury's. It's Milka.
I think they've swapped it then. Chocolate. Yeah.
I like Milka.
I love Milka.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm giving you that. That's fine. Okay. There is also... Yeah. You've got... That's all 4, isn't it? You bring it home. We've got caramelised onion. We've got chives. We've got salmon.
Chives is one I had.
I thought there was a salmon one.
One with actual salmon in it.
It sounds gross. And sweet chilli, which was where I was going on the chilli thing.
Okay. There we go.
Love this game. Should we do one more food
Let's
one?
Because
there's one more. Well, food and drink.
Oh, why
I
not?
Would say.
Let's do the food and drink.
And I'm not going to lie, Matt, the colour of your beverage makes me think you might be drinking some of this now. 12 flavours of Copperberg cider.
I'm drinking Vimto, sorry.
I don't drink Copperberg.
Well, you're just... It's how observant you are. Look, if neither of you like the Copperberg cider one, we'll switch. It's 599.5.
I mean, I can guess some fruits is basically what I'm going to be doing.
All right, I'm switching it. Let's go for another biggie. Simon Pegg has acted in 101 shows, Jesus, films, and games.
Oh, my Lord.
This includes, some of this seems like very, you know, like a TV show appearance type stuff.
Yeah.
Although I will say...
The big ones are more difficult, because I don't know how... Like, if they're smaller, I can start to think that I know a percentage of them, but that is just...
It's me to bid first.
It is. It's me to bid first.
Ha-ha. 11.
Ooh. He's going in. I'll try 12.
14.
Oh.
I don't know what I'm doing. I didn't even thought of...
Again, there are some names on here where you're like, what the fuck was that?
I don't think I can go that high.
14's big.
Yeah, go. Go.
But when you think about him appearing in like single episodes of stuff...
I've got a few of those in my head.
Okay, I'm going to... Start at the beginning. Well, I don't know if it is the beginning, but Spaced. Shaun of the Dead.
Yeah.
Hot Fuzz.
Yeah.
World's End.
Yeah.
Paul.
Yep.
The Boys.
Yep. Playing a really confusingly aged character.
Mission Impossible Ghost Protocol.
Yep.
Mission Impossible Rogue Nation.
Yeah.
I can't remember if he's in 4. That's... I'm just going to leave it for now. I feel like Star Trek.
Yeah.
That's Star nine. Trek Into Darkness.
10.
Can't remember the third one's name. or the middle one's.
Four more to go.
Simon Pegg. I'm trying to think of his face. Oh, Run, Fat Boy, Run.
Yeah, 11. The film where Hank Azaria's character has a big penis. That's what I remember about that film.
Should have got Willem Dafoe in.
Should.
There was another rom-com one that I thought was all right. I can't remember what it's called.
Three more.
I'm going Mission Impossible Fallout. I'm going to say
Mission Impossible Fallout is correct. 12.
Gosh, what was that voice?
You said Mish really Posh Poor Fallout.
Mish Posh. Simon Pegg, what else have you done, mate? Speak to me.
Two more.
What's that other Star Trek film called? I went into. Oh! Isn't he in The Force Awakens?
He is.
As a stormtrooper.
That's a quarter portion,
he says.
Oh, he's thingy, isn't he? He's
the
not a stormtrooper.
Scrapyard guy.
Yeah.
I watched it the other day.
What is that third Star Trek film called?
It's just Lynn Joint, isn't it, that one?
Yeah. Do you know what? I'm going to say he actually makes his Mission Impossible debut in 3.
You got all the mishmash mosh.
Mishmash.
Versus 4.
What's that Star Trek film called?
Beyond. Star Trek Beyond.
It's so Beyond. Shit. Oh,
I didn't
God,
watch that. So I quite like Beyond.
Oh, no.
Just think it's nice nonsense.
I just don't like Idris Elba doing acting in anything. except The Wire, where the only time he was ever good. Suck it, Luther fans.
I think, Cardi, was the rom-com you were thinking of, was that How to Lose Friends and Influence People?
Lose Friends and Alienate People.
Alienate People, that's it, yeah.
It might have been. I watched it on a plane.
There's some bizarre stuff in here, man. Like, so there's things like Big Train, Black Books, Brass Eye, where he makes those like one-off appearances.
Mm. He's in Band of Brothers as well,
isn't
he? He's
in Band of Brothers. Burke and Hare, remember that?
God, yeah.
He's in something called Danger, 50,000 Zombies. He's in something just called Don't. Fable 3. He's in Free Jimmy and Funky Pete. There's something called Hot Fuzz, Hot Funk, the TV version, which I guess is just dubbed.
It's also in an episode of Doctor Who.
The film I was thinking of was Man Up.
Man
and Lake Bell.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was all right.
And he's in Scrat's Continental Crack Up, the spin-off from the Ice Age series. So good for him. There you go. Go on, name him. Thank you very much to Daniel Warburton. We've also got a bunch more to use there, so we could do that. And we've got the whole other game, which I genuinely think will be interesting. So we'll do that.
He's in Band of Brothers.
We said that already.
Sorry. I was too busy reading the list.
Absolute pig.
Band of Brothers. Oh. I'm going to watch Band of Brothers after I've done The Sopranos. Should we do some feedback?
Mishmash.
I'll start with some feedback from Tom Chilton, who says, "Hi all, I have a similar story of game progress loss featured in last week's feedback. Let me paint you a picture."
Oh, please do, Tom.
"It was a stormy day. My now wife was home alone during a lightning storm. What? Never have I experienced one so bad. Whilst I was at the gym, the power goes out. Treadmills stop. The loud music shuts down. It all goes eerily quiet. I stay there anyway because I can still see what I'm doing and it's fine. Plus, who wants to cycle home in a lightning storm?" That's a very good point. Who does? "I then get a panicked call from my wife. She was in the kitchen doing some washing up and lightning hit a copper pipe on the outside of our building. That pipe being very close to the window she was stood at." Are you getting this picture painted?
Yeah.
"Yeah. She was fine, but felt a wave of energy come into the room and freaked out by it."
Wait.
It sounds like the start of a horror film.
A
wave of energy.
Is
like
that
poltergeist
like,
or
that's
something?
That's like when people, like, in a film, like, someone activates a wormhole and then scientists far away go, "We just detected energy that's come out through the quantum zone."
It sounds like the plot for a horror film, like a demon possesses a house via a lightning bolt.
A demon possessed my copper pipe. And then the copper pipe buckled, and that was it. Carry on.
Anyway, we had the wave of energy come into the room. I arrive home to find my PS4 was turning on, but nothing would display on the TV. Mm. The lightning had hit the phone line, which in turn went through the router and then into my hardline PS4. It completely fried the HDMI port and I had sent it off to be repaired, but to no avail. That's not good. Long story short, when I then got a new PS4 several months later, I downloaded my cloud saves. It turned out that my Dragon Age Inquisition save was from about 10 hours behind where I'd got to. I could never bring myself to go back through that. Respect the seemingly endless grind. Kind regards, Tom.
I love
this. It's 10 hours
I want
of
the energy.
Inquisition. Like, I know you two both like Dragon Age Inquisition quite a lot. Would you have gone back? Could you have left it?
I think I could have done for Inquisition. I liked it a lot all the way through. But I get that. Mm-hmm. I totally get that. You don't want to play 10 hours of stuff.
Especially like if you're still in the hinterlands at the beginning, which is like, it's a shame that Dragon Age starts with its roughest area.
Yeah.
Tom,
I will say I enjoyed that and I appreciate the horror of it, but you really did start with a very lyrical description of things happening, and like I could have done with the PS4, like I arrived home to find my PS4 slightly smoking in the night. I wanted a bit more like dangerous chat, but you know, that's
I want to be able to smell the story.
I want to be able to smell the fried HDMI port. That's what I'm going for. Right, Tom Morant writes. Oh no. Hi, guys. In response to the horrifying onsen story from Brock last week, which, go back and listen if you want to hear just, you know, basic sexual impropriety from an old man, I've decided to write in with my own experience of an onsen. Okay, I haven't read this. I don't know what we're about to get into.
That's fine.
Because I was not prepared for Brock's last week. I was travelling Japan with my two friends back in 2017. We're in the amazing volcanic city of Kagoshima. My friend lived in Kagoshima, and it was my friend's birthday. They have a good flower festival, just so you know. For the occasion, he wanted to get some food and then go to a specific onsen he read about. We went and ate, and then made our way to the onsen. Whilst in the onsen, I noticed an area of the bath that had a warning sign with an electric bolt on it. Okay, it's fine. Having experienced one of these myself at an onsen visit earlier in the trip, I recognized it as being a denkiburo, an area of the bath in which an electric current passes through the water between two metal plates and is meant to relax your muscles and relax you. I'll tell you now, it doesn't.
That sounds mad. Like, never put electricity in water. What are you doing?
This sounds like something they put in the baths to kill foreign people coming to the baths. The birthday boy was in another area of the bath, and as he walked over to join us, I said to my other friend, "Watch this." I gestured to the electric bath and said to my friend, "Mate, have a go in that." It's very straightforward language. With a worrying amount of trust, my friend entered the bath and waded straight into the electric bath. What followed was a yelp and a look of shock/pain that I had never seen on a human being's face, and hopefully never see again. It must have been really bad. Naturally, what followed was much laughter from me and my friend and a random middle-aged Japanese man who contributed a healthy and then a buzzed, which only brought more laughter. I love the idea of the old man sitting there just going,
buzzed.
After that, I felt bad and meekly apologised for potentially ruining my friend's birthday. Luckily, he took it well and saw the funny side himself. I then immediately got my comeuppance in the form of two events. First, I entered a freezing plunge pool, which felt amazing after the hot baths. However, I stayed in this pool for way too long and after exiting, almost passed out. After having composed myself, I decided to call that a day and went out to the communal changing rooms to dry off and get dressed. It was the second event offered up my karma. As I was getting dressed, I looked up from putting my socks on and made direct eye contact with the arsehole of what I think may have been the oldest man in Japan. As he rubbed some sort of cream/lotion into it. I took this as my punishment for what I had done to my friend and accepted this as karma restored. Thanks, and for Christ's sake, respect the sea. That's a very, it is a very Buddhist way of looking at that situation, Tom. Yeah. You've
Then you may have to not only respect the sea, but respect the onsen as well.
Yeah.
Because they're places you can't, you know, you can't keep, you got to keep your guard up in an onsen by the sounds of it. It's not the relaxing place that it's claimed to be. But yeah, you can't knock it.
I mean, I have been, I've always wanted to go to an onsen, specifically that one where all the monkeys go in it. But I've gone off it now. People keep telling us how horrible it is.
Electrocuted and looking at very old arses.
Yeah, not into it.
Matt. Shall we switch the conversation to something a little bit more food-based?
Yes. Mm.
So this is from James Martin, who says, it's the flapjack fan. Howdy.
Oh, no, the IGN UK flapjack fan.
Yeah.
There we go. So took a week off work, so upon my return, had to double podcast dip for the commute. Thank you for the entertaining drive. So I thought I'd treat myself on my fuel stop at the Esso to a vanilla latte in a super-duper deal. Not one, but two flapjacks today.
Holy shit, Jakes. Chill out.
Swinging point was that they were 50p each in the bargain basket, and credit to Carol, who I think had worked there since it was BP back in 1987.
Oh, this is so detailed.
She tried her hardest to sell me the flapjack delights that were close to being thrown away due to the short 3-day left on their best before date. Due to no cherry Bakewell, I had to settle for a choc chip one and the other being a yoghurt-topped one.
Yes, yoghurt. Ooh. Yes, please. Yeah.
I
just love yoghurt.
The choc chip was like the annual FIFA release. Promised greatness, but let itself down by being a boring, predictable and nothing groundbreaking. 4 out of 10.
So I just want to point out, if you haven't heard the original thing, all it was James saying that
he likes
buying a flapjack and said he's going to call himself the IGN flapjack fan. I don't think we ever asked for reviews. I love it, but we didn't ask for any of this. This is just... James is clearly a very self-possessed man. Like, he's like, you know what? I'm just going to write in and tell them about flapjacks twice. And I think it's amazing.
Well, right, there we go.
So we've got 4 out of 10 for choc chip.
Four out of 10.
I'm desperate to hear the yoghurt.
Okay. Now, the yoghurt, on the other hand, akin to Insomniac's Ratchet and Clank.
Yes.
I did not expect much, and one that would normally pass me by. However, after every bite, it got better and better and made me wanting more. A hidden gem that needs to be tried by everyone.
Yes.
9 out of 10. I believe that's an amazing on the IGN score.
That is amazing on the IGN score, akin to Insomniac's Ratchet and Clank.
The yoghurt flapjack. I like a yoghurt flapjack.
I was ripped apart by the taste of the yoghurt. The tang with the sweetness.
There we go.
I like yoghurt-covered stuff because you can kind of trick your head into thinking it's white chocolate, but it's better. It's slightly better for you.
It is tastier than white chocolate. This is the secret.
I don't know about that.
To a hard yoghurt.
That used to be my choice. Like, if I ever bought flapjacks, a white chocolate-topped one would be my choice.
Mm.
But I don't know, these days I've kind of... White chocolate used to be my thing, but I think I'm more of a milk chocolate person now. I think my sweet tooth's slightly going.
No, white chocolate's not for me.
You verge into dark... Like, dark milk is currently my favourite chocolate bar, which is Cadbury's mix of dark chocolate and milk chocolate. It's very,
good
very
shit.
Good.
Might order that
the
one.
The ones I like, if you had, like, the Hobnob flapjacks, they're very good.
I have not, but I love Hobnobs. They're one of the only biscuits I actually truly enjoy. I'm not a biscuit guy. That's just me.
I love a biscuit.
James, I would love you to keep writing in extremely detailed and, you know, some might say boring descriptions of you buying flapjacks and your reviews of them. I can't guarantee we will continue to read them out, but I promise you I will read everything you send me because I think this is amazing.
It does mean you have to veer away from the cherry Bakewell that we all know you love so much. But
well, if he's
I think
getting,
you'd do that.
If he's getting two at a time. Yeah. Get your cherry Bakewell and then just review the other one. Although we haven't had a review of the cherry Bakewell yet, so that's still on the table.
I think it's in the original email, cherry Bakewell's the best one, so I imagine that might get a full 10.
He said it was his fave. I'm looking it up. Prior to me hitting the M4 for the dreaded 50 miles per hour average speed zone started all along the Welsh corridor, I always grab a Costa coffee and a flapjack from the local SL garage, cherry Bakewell being my fave. That was the original.
So it's got to be a 9 or 10 then, the cherry Bakewell.
The Red Dead Redemption 2 of flapjacks.
Amazing. Well, that was fun. It wasn't quite podcast 600, but like we said, God, if you like Green Street, if you got a treat tomorrow.
I think genuinely there's something there for not everyone.
Yeah.
10% of our listeners.
No, there's stuff there, because I think even if you don't like the film, you might enjoy our company. Because like we said, we do practically natter over the whole hour and 45 minutes of it.
I think we do make Green Street better. Because it's not good. I love it, but it's not good. And if you haven't watched it before, you know what? It's probably better to watch it just with us for the first time anyway. Just put the captions on and enjoy.
I'm sure Matt agreed.
Yeah. He loved it.
Amazing.
You like the company, didn't you, Matt?
Like, as much as my face tells a very different picture during that entire video version, I did have a good time. I just don't understand the film in the slightest.
It's a shame for you. Hopefully we'll have a great weekend. I'm trying to forget about what's happening this weekend, because I'll throw up if I think about it. So
correct.
There we go. What music should we have?
What have we talked about?
A lot of stuff. I feel like we've played Deathloop more than once. So
what about
give
just
that a rest?
What just you know, just the Halo theme tune?
The main Halo theme.
Oh yeah, get all those lads singing the theme in the bathroom. Have you seen that video?
Yeah,
let's get that on it.
Lovely. Beautiful. What a lovely time. We'll be back next week. For more, I can't speak anymore.
Just
for
go more, and wash Mish Possible.
Yeah. We'll be back for Marvel and probably tons of super surprising stuff next week. And flapjacks, I don't know. Goodbye.
Sweet dreams.
See ya.
There, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts, with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for two women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it, or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz. And how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.